남도 조정이 이제 저 이제 된 이 밤에 랭크 제라는 이 중에서 조정이 좀더 상당히 좋아. 제 이제 빨리 좀 해줬던데. 나도 다시 내린다는 잡지. 담배 추다. 초바상 삼바세대 태종된 경원을 졸. 건배 용문반 타다를 졸 때, 근데, 타이베 심진아 펜바자 템본종을 만나며.
자산 mit einem herzlichen guten Morgen.
Everyone gathered here, good morning. With the wish that you may be freed from bondage in the net of doubts in connection with listening, reflecting, and meditating on the genuine teachings, and that through meditation you may become free of disturbing emotions and thereby be enabled to benefit limitless numbers of beings. From the middle turning of the Wheel of Dharma, from the teachings dealing with the Prajnaparamita texts, Rinpoche gave a brief explanation on the view of the Svatantrika and Prasangika Madhyamaka schools. And if you have any doubts, hesitations about this, then he is now giving the opportunity to ask questions about it. When one is given the opportunity to ask questions, it is important to ask them from a proper motivation. In this case, it would mean asking the question from the point of view of the Bodhisattva attitude of wishing to accomplish Buddhahood in order to be able to benefit all beings. But in this connection, one has certain doubts regarding the teachings that have been given. If one didn't have these doubts, there wouldn't be any questions to ask. So one should ask the question with the intention to become free of all doubts and in this way become able to free all beings, clarify the doubts of all beings.
In dem mittleren Pfad oder im Madhyamaka-System ist es so, dass
with the Madhyamaka view, one starts with doubts which are of a coarse nature, and as one works with it, the doubts become more and more subtle, and it is only when one has become free of the subtlest doubts in connection with it that one has perfected the view of Madhyamaka. As long as one has any doubts of of any kind remaining, the process of developing the view is not completed.
So ganz allgemein gesprochen ist das, was man als verkehrte Sichtweise, verkehrte Einstellung zeichnen kann und Zweifel auf der anderen Seite, sind das nicht, sind das keine Arten von Bewusstsein, so wie unser prinzipielles Wahrnehmungsbewusstsein, was überhaupt die Anwesenheit von Phänomenen oder Gegenständen wahrnimmt, sondern es sind
in connection with, in the context of talking about doubts and wrong views, Rinpoche distinguished between primary consciousness and mental events or mental derivatives. The primary consciousness deals with the the main process of consciousness, with sensory consciousness and the rational mind. And the mental derivatives are so different states found as patterns within the mind. And as long as there are doubts and wrong views, then there is continual motion. One's thoughts are always in motion, churning up this whole set of mental derivatives, and one alternates between different states of mind, going from one extreme to the other, feeling completely down or completely on top, going through continual changes of state, and one shouldn't be overwhelmed by this, because the whole process is compared to an ocean, where the different changing states are like the waves, and these waves can be pacified, they can fall back into the same ocean from which they came. So in this way one can become free of them.
So, welche Fragen bestehen?
Gibt es irgendwas, was sich nicht verändert?
So,
random la jumi ke ya yene yang jumi ki ke pa de yendong ka su he na yendong sa tin do tin de su ka su he na de wa chen bu ye ha ko so random lo le yang chuni tong ni jora me ma re ra wa te ka so bo ran yin tong ba ni si ti jora me ka ni ye ne lo jora me ka ni ye Tony Chirogire, Tony Chiroganani Rangin Tobany. Chutam Jetty Nelo, Chutam Jetty Rangin, Teniso Chile Debare, Chepard to serve, and also same Genelo, same Gerangin, your Zoju Meba, your own. Look, Oma Tanjo Jolo, the same Genelo, Trubata driver, Chuji Yin Dela.
In
Sancho Sabata Sema Tumbani Toka Sancho Sabata Sema Nandi Jaranga Sendi Ranginga Zoki Kanyataya Yoma Kanyatan Togumar Yapo Yanzo Togumar Duka Yanzo Mare Ranginga Zoki Daya Yoma Rere Pama Papa Mama Nandi Jam
Aus dem Grund,
Aus dem Grund,
Oder in ganz kurz.
So the question was, is there something unchanging? And the answer was that the Dharmadhatu, or the Dharmata, also called the pure being, or the emptiness, are unchanging, or these are all different names for the same thing, and this is a name for the fundamental nature of mind, and this is unchanging. This is described in the Rongtong system in connection with the 16 types of emptiness, of which there is one called natural emptiness, which means the nature of all phenomena is free of any artificial constructs or contrivances. And because the nature of phenomena is free of these, then also the mind's, the nature of mind is completely free of any sort of artificial constructs or contrivances. In the Shentong and the Mahamudra and Dzogchen teachings, there is a very close connection made to this. There's a very extensive way of explaining this in terms of the that the nature of mind itself is empty of any incidental imperfections or anything which is passing or changing. So this fundamental nature itself is completely free of change, and it is free of change to such an extent or in such a way that whether Buddhas come to this realm and give teachings or not, that nature will be will remain completely unchanged in itself. Even the highly developed bodhisattvas who have great powers would not be able to do anything to that nature which would change it. And even the bodhisattvas and bodhisattvas, when they achieve direct realization of that nature of mind, they do not make any changes in it, and in fact they cannot make any, it's not possible to make any changes in it. If one takes it from the point of view of thoughts, then the thoughts that one has about things are changing, but the essence or nature of those thoughts itself is beyond change.
Okay.
Ja. Jeg vil spørge.
Denne.
Denne.
Denne sjøb ningpulla. Zumpa tumpa. Zuk tumpa. Zuk tumpa ni. Zumpa. Zuk tumpa ni. Zuk tumpa ni. Tumpa ni zuk so. Sjøsung so. Denne. Den de kan disse hagogere che paradu gemma di tompe tompe di zukso kayen sen zukti jordogere tompe ni joa mebare tene jurwe jurwe chuchin zuk di mena den jurwe me betompe ni che to kimare te to aure be
re te chunin jurwe me pare zom jurwe re ini ya chunin zok zom jurm zok di chunin jurmi yin batang rangin jin jurwe me pa yin batang zom jurwe jurwe yo pa ten de te nama yin batte ni de to kale ka bo yo re
Right. So the question. The question is based on the quotation from the Heart Sutra that emptiness is form and form is emptiness. How is this to be understood? In what sense, especially with respect to the last one, that emptiness is form? Is this to be understood that if one didn't have all of these changing forms, then one wouldn't, the emptiness wouldn't be able to arise, wouldn't be anything to have the emptiness in? And Rinpoche's answer was that that the unchanging emptiness is the nature of the unchanging forms. But the way these go together, to understand the way these go together, is very, very difficult. It's an extremely subtle subject. And he started out by saying that it deals with the subject of a mode of appearance and mode of being. One has to distinguish between the mode of appearance, that is to say, the way things appear to be, how they seem to be, and this is the level of form, which is changing and involves all kind of contrivances and so on, whereas the nature of that, the nature of that form, the nature of all of that changing appearance is the mode of being. It's the way things really are in their fundamental being, which is free of any sort of elaborations. It's free of conceptual elaborations. Nagarjuna made a praise to the Buddha in which he took up this question of the difference between the form which derives through the interdependent relation of causes and conditions, while its nature transcends interdependent causes and conditions. Its nature is beyond interrelation. It is beyond any sort of conceptual elaborations. And in relation to a single basis, that is to say, given any specific form or any anything whatsoever, one has these two levels taking place together. One has the level of the interdependent relations through which that thing comes about, and one has the level of its nature, which transcends that interdependence and is the emptiness free of conceptuality. So this, the fact that any given thing is like that, is extremely difficult to understand. It is a marvelous, a wonderful fact. The fact that the Buddha used a single object to point this out is a very marvelous thing. So one has these two levels of things taking place simultaneously, samsara, which depends on causes and conditions. Without causes and conditions, there would be no samsara arising. The same is true of the suffering in samsara, that it arises dependent on causes and conditions. However, the nature of those transcends causes and conditions. It does not depend on causes and conditions. It is completely beyond those. And the fact that the Buddha could demonstrate this in connection with any given phenomenon indicates the profundity and the magnificence of this teaching. So it is due to the habitual tendencies or patterns in the minds of beings that the problem comes about, because samsara and the suffering of samsara, because of these habitual tendencies, appears and seems to exist, and because it seems to exist, one assumes that it does, and in assuming that it does, one takes it as truly existent, whereas the nature of that deluded mind, of that deluded appearance, is appearance and emptiness, which is beyond any sort of these confused ideas. So what one should think about in order to understand this is the example of the dream, the samsara arising in a dream, and the suffering of samsara experienced in a dream seems in the dream to be true because of the habitual tendencies present in the mind from beginningless time, whereas there is no reality to those things appearing in the dream other than the thought that they are true. So what they are in fact is not a set of truly existent things, but it is the appearance and emptiness inseparable. It is non-dual reality, which is empty of any of the ideas that one could have about it. Milarepa taught on this in a song dealing with eight kinds of mastery. In the verse dealing with mastery of the view, he said, if one realizes that appearance and emptiness are inseparable, this is mastery of the view. So the fact is that any sort of appearance that could occur to the mind is empty. There is the assumption that what appears is truly existent, but that assumption is a mere thought. The appearance itself is empty of that idea of its true existence and has been so from the beginning. And this is what is meant by the Buddha's teaching, saying form is emptiness, emptiness is form. It means that anything appearing is form and emptiness inseparable. So in this way one can see the difference between samsara and nirvana. Samsara is taking the appearance and emptiness to be truly existent. So one takes the appearance itself as being something having true existence separate from the perceiving mind. One has this thought, this deluded thought, this confused idea of it, which is the way samsara comes about. Whereas to realize that the appearance and the emptiness are not two different things, that they are in fact inseparable, and there is no validity to this idea of the appearance as being truly existent, that is nirvana. When one completely realizes the inseparability of appearance and emptiness, that is Buddhahood.
Yeah.
Das ist der Gesang von Milarepa über die acht Arten von Meisterschaft in dem ersten Punkt, wo er sagt, dass wenn der Sein und Erscheinung als untrennbar erkannt sind, dann ist es die Sichtweise, gemeistert zu haben. Andere Fragen?
Nelung, Oma Nelung, Tatopa, die Hindu, Samunda, Chava, Toka, weil ich ein bisschen in der Rimba sehe. pēnā yīgē tēwā tā, zō yīrī zī tā, yīgē tēwā sō tā jīgwā rē. Nē lō ngō mā xīyā tā jīg tā, yā pō jīg xī gō rē yīnā yāng, yīgē tā wā nā jīg rē yīnā yāng, yīgē tā wā jī tā tāng bō rā kwā tē, tēnē chā wā tē, tēnē xīn tā chā wā chā wā chā wā chā wā, tēnē tēnē pār sēn pā jīg xī gō rē wā. Tē yīn tā sāng jē jā nē lō bōng tā mē tē mā tā tō pā tē, tēnē xīn tā tō pār kā wā yīn tā sē nā, tēnē rēn pā sē tē. Rākpa rākpa mōn lā tēng, rākpa rākpa lā tēng mē, rēmbē rēmbē tāwa lā jō bē, tāp sā mō tā tāp kēpā rē, rāwa, tāp sā mō tā tāp kēpā rē. Tē tāng jīg tēng jī lōb jōng kāng lā rākpa rākpa mōn lā tāwa tāwa jīs lā bē yā rāwa, yīgē tāwa tā tā pē yā sō wā, yīgē tāwa lā sō bē, rēmbā tēng rākpa mōn lā tāwa jīs lā bā tēng jīndu, tēne tō, dākya kato mba dzobu sanje jom dien de hiram thar senpa maze nyingye yang thar senpa seno senchen la teni duendan tenpa thar sokwa tenpa togwa thap je rabba seno sokwa ten teni sanje zewa nyingye jenpo yuebe tam kheba zewa
tam
kheba zewa natürlich ist es so, das ist eigentlich nur eine Tero, Nesonto, Jeva Sengina, Natseva Ninja Temple, Jisogong, the Ninja Temple Zekte, Neson de Depele, Pang, Gabele, Drope, Tori Lata, Mari Deva, Tupa Lam, Lam de Pichedo, the name called Dongata, Dongati Jo, Maro, Neson Dongata, Dongati Jo, Depa, and Batin de, the name Neson, the door, the Tori Tori Lam de.
Das lässt sich sehr.
What was the question?
Actually, this fits to any question.
So the question was in German, so I don't know exactly, but it was something like if this, the nature of the mind is one thing and very simple, so why all these different schools and complicated explanations, right? So Rinpoche started by saying that it's the Buddha perfected not only the Buddha brought knowledge to perfection, the whole faculty of intelligence he perfected, but not only that, he also perfected compassion, and because of his perfect compassion, then he saw that even though the nature of the mind is very simple, you can't just say, well, it's this, and then everybody will understand it. Because there are different levels, beings on different levels, so one has to explain it gradually and in a way that could be understood by everyone, no matter which level they were on. In a similar sort of way as in an ordinary school, when one is going to educate anyone, one starts with the roughest kind of level. If it's, for example, writing the letters of the alphabet, then one starts writing big, coarse letters, and then slowly one gets into finer and finer details, and one keeps the finest points one presents last. The most subtle things are presented in the end. So the Buddha has done it in the same way. And in that connection, he presented something called the three levels of capacity with respect to beings. So for those who are on the lowest level of capacity, he did not present the teachings on the ultimate nature or genuine reality, even though those beings are in ignorance about the genuine nature of the real reality. He did not teach that. What he taught was the path to the higher realms, because he taught that if you the suffering in the lower realms is very great. So he taught about that suffering, and then he taught about the cause for that suffering as being negative actions. So he taught that one has to give up the negative actions because happiness consists in living in the higher realms. And the cause of happiness in the higher realms is virtuous action. So in this way, for beings of that capacity, he taught the path leading to higher existences among the gods and humans as being the goal. Then those those who had an intermediate level of capacity, which corresponds to the Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha practitioners, he taught that all of the suffering in samsara is, or all of samsara is suffering, also the higher realms, that the higher realms also do not constitute an aim in themselves because they are also suffering. And at this level, there is, at the intermediate level of Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha, there is a lesser degree of compassion present, small compassion. And it's called small compassion because at that level, one does not have as the goal to accomplish Buddhahood in order to benefit limitless sentient beings. And one is not willing to stay in samsara sweating away for three endless kalpas or seven or 37 for the sake of beings. One wants to get out. And to get out, one employs prajna, the knowledge practiced on this level, which is also described as being a lesser knowledge. And it's lesser because it only understands the emptiness of the individual self. It does not understand the emptiness of outer phenomena. But on this level, one looks at the whole of samsara as being suffering, and that the cause of this, of the occurrence of the cyclic existence of samsara, is a clinging to the idea of a self, or an identity, or a truly existent substantial essence constituting oneself. Because one clings to that at this level, then the Buddha taught all of the outer appearances as if they were real. So the outer perceived objects were taught as if they had reality and were therefore connected to the suffering that one is also experiencing as being real. But the root of it here was taught as being the view of, or the clinging to self. So the Buddha taught the view on non-self. And through teaching this, then enabled the practitioners to cut the root of the samsaric cycle and attain arhathood as the aim. Then in his, because he had perfect compassion and perfect knowledge, the Buddha also gave teachings about the highest level of capacity for people like us who are practicing the Mayan and who have the bodhisattva or bodhicitta power of mind, which is able to envision staying within samsara for three endless kalpas, or seven or 37 kalpas, in order to accomplish Buddhahood for the sake of sentient beings. And not only are these great beings willing to stay that long, but they're also willing to develop compassion to such an extent that they would be willing to give their own bodies if their enemies were interested in killing them, or if someone needed parts, body parts, then, or wanted to, one would be willing to go through the whole process of being cut up, and even if one's limbs were cut off bit by bit, chopped off, one wouldn't for an instant experience anger. This is a bodhisattva mind. And also at this level, one has great prajna, a very advanced type of intelligence, which is able to cut the root of existence completely, and that is to say, is able to cut through not only the idea of permanence, but also the idea of impermanence, and conceiving of things as truly existent. The bodhisattva's level of knowledge sees the emptiness not only of the individual self, but also of the outer phenomena, and is able to cut through seeing a phenomena as having a substantial essence, which is which would make a given phenomena able to last or give it the power to stay. So seeing that there is no substantial essence within phenomena, one sees that they have no power to remain or have no actual reality on their own terms. Then from this level, then one can progress to the Vajrayana level, on which one develops pure vision, able to see pure appearances. One is able to see all of appearing existence. Everything which appears in terms of existence is seen as having universal purity. That is to say, one sees the outer vessel of the world as being like the mandala of the deity, and one sees the beings within the world as being the deities. And it's not the case that one just sees one's friends and dearest ones as being like deities and all one's enemies being like demons, but one sees all beings without exception, including one's enemies, as being like completely pure deities. The point here then is that each higher level of each higher and more subtle level presented is also more difficult to understand. So the Buddha did not start by presenting the highest level to all beings immediately. It's very difficult to see that all beings are deities. That's a difficult thing to see. So one has to understand the explanation that goes before that that makes that understandable, and then one has to understand the one that goes before that that makes that intelligible, and so on, until one gets down to the beginning levels. So one has the different. This is the way that the view associated with the different levels of schools came about. And it's also the explanation of why the three levels of capacity were explained. So there are some beings, on the other hand, who in this life do not have to go through all of these different steps of training. They can immediately realize the highest level of teachings. And why is that? That is because they, in previous lives, have been practicing diligently and developed the understanding corresponding to the previous levels of training already in previous lives, so they now can immediately understand a higher level. Then Rinpoche presented an outline of the different levels of view as presented in the schools. So the view as presented in the Vaibhashika school asserts the relative level to consist in anything that can be broken down. Anything that can be split up and broken down or disintegrate constitutes the relative level for the Vaibhashikas, and the ultimate level, or what is genuine reality in that system, is what is indivisible, and they envision a level of atoms which is so subtle that it cannot be further subdivided. So it's called the subtle partless particle as being the basis for as being genuine reality for the outer world, and they speak of an indivisible instant of consciousness as being the as also being associated with that outer world as the experience of it. So that's for the Vaibhashika system, the definition of genuine reality. Then for the Sautantika level, relative truth is described as being the realm of abstract ideas. So anything dealing with thought, anything that has to do with attaching labels or manipulating concepts is the relative level, whereas anything having concrete characteristics is the ultimate genuine reality. So what appears directly and is perceived directly is the ultimate. Then in the mind-only school, the Chittamatran, the relative truth consists in the deluded state of mind, which thinks that appearances are something existing separately from the perceiving mind. So there is a dualistic split made between perceived object and perceiving mind, each of them being taken as separate and real. This delusion is the relative level for the Chittamatrans, and the inner consciousness, which is described as being self-aware and self-illuminating consciousness, empty of the dualism of perceived and perceiver, is the ultimate truth of genuine reality. Then the Madhyamaka system then has these different levels of Rangtong and Shentong, and within Rangtong one has also different levels. The Svatantrika Rangtong then describes the relative level as being the interdependent connection between causes and conditions, which makes a mere appearance like an illusion. And the ultimate level consists in that there is no substantial essence, that those appearances that derive from the combination of causes and conditions themselves do not exist with an essence of their own. There is nothing constituting them substantially. That is the ultimate emptiness, free of speculation or free of conceptual elaborations. Then on this Svatantrika level, they refute true existence of things, but they assert the non-true existence of them as being a factor in it of its own. They refute the arising of phenomena, but they assert their non-arising as constituting a truth in itself. And this then is refuted by the following school. The Prasangikas do not themselves make any assertions like this, but they refute all assertions made by other schools involving any sort of conceptual tempering, as for example thinking of the emptiness as being the existence of the non-reality of things. So the Prasangika school avoids making any assertions as such and refutes all other assertions. The ultimate level for them is emptiness free of all conceptual elaborations. Then the next level of Madhyamaka is the Shentong, and here Rinpoche said he's going to explain it very briefly, because that's the subject for this afternoon's teaching, which he'll explain in detail. So here he only mentioned very briefly that the fundamental nature of mind, as described by the Shentong, is not mere emptiness, not just a vacuum, but it is luminosity or clear light. And this clear light, nature of mind, is beyond anything that can be thought or said. It transcends thought and expression. And through realizing that, then the delusions connected with thought are pacified. This is then followed by the Mahamudra level of views, which itself includes three levels: the Sutra Mahamudra, Mantra Mahamudra, and Quintessential Mahamudra. But if one were to briefly explain the second of these, it consists in bliss and emptiness. The inseparable union of bliss and emptiness is the fundamental nature of mind. And if one realizes that, then the entire collection of thoughts is self-liberated. Then the Dzogchen defines the fundamental nature of mind as being primordial purity, complete, or primordial purity, great completion. That is definition of fundamental.
Waren noch zwei heute Morgen, die noch Fragen hatten?
You feel the pain in your finger, but you also feel that the pin is sticking into me. So there's these two things quite clear. Now, how does a realized being experience that? He feels the pain in his finger. But what about the me? He clings to the me. So how, you know, what happens with a realized being?
Wenn einer langsam oder kaputt zum Nehmen. Du mal Zeuge der Idee, du mal.
Nehmen wir mal eine Tüte da, sehe. Alle Kartoffeln sammeln. Nan zin yore, kaalak dan zene. Di zene dan zin yore, tenpe donga dan chowa yore. Tene papa san, sepa chime lo gyer gyan narawa. Papa san ju sabba nam lan, tene, nane papa san ju sabba nam narawamu yore donga yore mare seme. Jun chin karasana, konso la dan zin yore mare, sogo kaansa la dan zin yore mare. Tene, chu tam chin juma tabo, malam tabo ikibe kya zene, tene, malam mo shiba dawa.
So die Frage war, was passiert also, wenn man sich...
Ja.
So the answer to the question is that it depends on who's sticking the needle in. If it's an ordinary being, then there is the experience of suffering connected with the sticking the needle in, because the person doing it has the sense of there being a personal self, personal identity as truly existent, and also takes the finger that's being stuck as being a finger existing truly. So there's both the idea of a personal self present and a finger existing truly. A realized being, in this context we're talking about a bodhisattva, doesn't have suffering in this connection, because there's no sense of the phenomenon being truly existent, nor of the self-experiencing as being truly existent. It's like the experience of being stuck in the finger by a needle in a dream. So one being stuck are like they are illusory, as in a dream, and that's the way a realized being would take it directly, and this way would not have suffering, but would it would correspond to recognizing that it was a dream while it was happening. And in this connection, Rinpoche on the spot composed a verse which corresponds with Prasangika view on this subject, which says, even though there is this and that, a feeling of happiness and suffering, If it's investigated, if one analyzes it, it is free of conceptual elaborations, and this is the genuine reality. If it's not investigated, then there is an experience which belongs to apparent reality, and therefore there are two modes. There is in everything there are two modes: a mode of appearance and a mode of being.
But it's not a god. Was it okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Da hat
er. Wer war der andere?
What is meant by unborn? What is meant by unborn?
Matjeba sena ne ne da. Matjeba sena. Kevameba.
Kevameba. Kevameba sije te. Kevamo wo ma do pata da. Pena malam do pati kina. Malam wo ma ke pata pa ngor che wale mina yang wo ne ma ji pa. Jama. Keva ta na na yang keva la ngo me pa sena ma ji pa se. Na se bo chi do.
So the Suramchi's answer to the question was that in the essence of the of something being born or arising, there is nothing existing there. There is no, the arising does not exist with an essence of its own. And he said it's like a child born in a dream. If you get a child in a dream, then you seem to have gotten a child. So there's definitely this appearance happening, but even though there seems to be a child there, nothing was born. So then Rinpoche said, in general, with phenomena, their arising is a mere appearance. And this appearance comes about through the collection of interrelated causes and conditions. But actually, there is no arising. And in this connection, he quoted a verse from the sutras, which say, anything which arises dependent on conditions does not arise. Within it, there is no arising having a substantial nature. Anything that arises due to conditions is empty. Oh. So, then Rinpoche went on to say that that in a dream there seem to be arising and ceasing. There are these appearances of arising and ceasing in a dream, But even though they appear, they are delusory appearances or projections of a confused mind. And in actuality, there is no arising taking place. And in a similar way, the appearances of this life, which arise due to causes and conditions, do not really arise. Rinpoche then composed a verse in this, in honor of this question, which says, this assorted collection of appearances of arising and ceasing, this assorted collection of appearances of arising this assorted collection of arising and ceasing since it arises, or since it is a mere appearance due to the collection of causes and conditions, does not really arise in reality like the arising that takes place in a dream. So the question was, what about obstacles to one's practice of Dharma due to severe physical suffering? And Rinpoche's answer was that the body does not exist with an essence of its own, like a body in a dream. And similarly, the self, which experiences the body, does not exist with a substantial nature. And therefore, the suffering which arises relative to this body and self also could not exist with a substantial nature of its own, since the basis for its arising do not exist substantially. And if one realizes that, then one experiences a completely open and relaxed state, and this open and relaxed state is the practice of Dharma. So then Rinpoche composed a verse in this connection. Whatever there may be of suffering connected with one's body and mind, one should believe, or one should develop the confidence that these have arisen from karmic action. This is the relative aspect of it. But the ultimate aspect is that they do not arise in reality, in genuine reality. If one has faith in this, this is profound practice, combining the two truths, relative and ultimate.
랑을 드다 세미나 동아 열에 데 된다베 동아 하장 김부 여든 다 예들 생기나는 맥기 에니 간다 아 랑게 생긴 탐지 뒷바다 동아 탐지 랑게 뒷 동아는 미미 에니 야마다 아빠죠 손사마다 랑게 데바다 게바는 생긴나 아멘
So, dann darüber hinaus?
Denam Magadonaga. Lele, Najam pigre, young Najal in the Tado pig. Doma Jona, Yagre Kalasana, Kova the Mijun Tigre, Najayo Marimijun Tigre, young round the man who was in Saint Jin and Ningi pig. This and a dinner magadon.
A method for purifying the suffering that one has. Depend the suffering arising through a body and through a self. So these sufferings connected with the idea of body and I can be purified through a method which is very central to the Mahayana, which consists first in, as the method is called giving and taking, or taking and sending, and probably most of you already know it. One starts by developing compassion, and the way that one does that is by thinking that these sufferings that I have, there are probably, or there are definitely numberless beings who have sufferings like this, and in fact many who have sufferings that are incredibly more difficult than these. Through thinking in this way, then one develops compassion for all of these beings based on one's own suffering. One then follows this up by the exercise that is involved in this practice, which is connected with the breathing, where one thinks that with the inhalation, one is taking in all of the suffering of all beings without exception, and the causes of that suffering. One is taking them into oneself with the inhalation, and with the exhalation one is sending out all of one's own happiness and well-being and positive qualities and the causes of those, and that this is penetrating all beings, and they achieve highest happiness. So through doing this, then one can, based on one's sickness, one increases the one's Mahayana practice. And in this connection, Rinpoche also composed a verse saying bodhisattvas and bodhisattmas do not like happiness, they like suffering. If there is happiness, one's pride increases. If there is suffering, renunciation and compassion increase. So from the bodhisattva point of view, the happiness is can be an obstacle because it can serve to increase one's pride and the jealousy that is attracted due to that pride. And if there is suffering, this then has the effect of increasing one's renunciation of samsara and the sufferings found there, and increases one's compassion for all beings. So therefore, bodhisattvas are not very happy about happiness. Then what makes them happy is suffering.
Andere Fragen? Wenn jetzt keine weiteren Fragen stehen, dann können wir ein bisschen meditieren.
So there are two different ways that one could rest in meditation according to the Madhyamaka view, following either that of the Svatantrika or the Prasangika. If one is following the Svatantrika way, then one rests in emptiness, which is total emptiness, like a complete vacuum in which there is nothing. And if one rests in the way that it is done in the Prasangika, then one rests in a way which does not involve thinking of the emptiness as being something. In fact, it doesn't involve any conceptual elaborations at all. It is resting in a completely open state, free of any conceptual elaborations or speculation. And of the two ways, the latter is the best.